But wait, a real resistance that can be a catalyst for transformation in society is not simply some kind of knee-jerk reaction or pushback. We who are liberal-minded do not, in fact, change conservative-minded folks by posting to our Facebook pages articles from Democracy Now! And on Facebook, the conservatives are likely to change the liberals by posting links to articles or stories from Fox News. Resistance cannot simply be making a really loud noise. If anything, the louder we are, the more chaos there is, and the less likely there is to be any real change or transformation. I suspect I should really amend that just a little bit. Resistance, or the act of pushing, could in fact be a big noise or a huge argument or a loud gong signifying nothing. Or perhaps that can look like resistance. Maybe that's just faux resistance. Central to Myers' definition is the word action. And I think Myers means action with power. I can stand in my kitchen. I can raise my voice to my children, wave my arms and make myself look menacing. And I might feel like I am resisting their attempts to clean up after themselves. But it might be way more effective for me to resist this natural inclination of mine to yell and to resist their natural inclination to messiness by quietly saying, "The consequence to not cleaning up after dinner is that you lose your phone." No yelling is necessary in that instance. And key to all of this is that resistance does not transform you or I or an organization or a community unless we are undone first. And that, for me, is the scary part. I'm not sure always I want to be undone. In the church, as in life itself, the rule of entropy still applies. Things fall apart before they are put back together. Disorientation precedes reorientation. Folks look back at the troubled times of this congregation and wonder, how did we let ourselves argue like that? How could we have been so, and there are any number of negative judgmental words that folks will end that sentence with. But there is another way to look at those troubled times. They were the time that this congregation was being undone. Painful. Undone is painful. Some might have described it as pruning the plants so healthier growth can happen, and that is true in a sense. But it was also a time of undoing, of disorientation. Perhaps First UU has already been undone, and maybe now we are in a process that repeats itself. We're not undone once and for all. Maybe the troubles were one of the undoings, and maybe we are in the process of reorienting. But what all this points to is that change is hard. Reverend Gretchen Haley put it this way: critical to Myers' definition of resistance is the word action. Resistance, for our purposes, is not ideological, analytical, or theoretical. It is embodied in action that either directly or indirectly opposes those things that bring death or indignity. Spiritually grounded resistance has the goal of creating or facilitating transformation. Myers, in his book, put forth that there are three things that get in the way of this transformation: ego, orthodoxy, and empire. What if we were to see faith as resistance to ego? And here I have to say is where I think we UUs fall short a lot. We tend to get caught up in having the right answer, and we get a little stuck there. It's not that this isn't a human inclination of everybody, it's just one of our favorite inclinations. I think I've told this story before, but I have a colleague who served in a congregation on the West Coast, a place where you would expect they would be on the front edges of environmental causes and kind of getting the big picture. Her congregation spent 2 years trying to develop a plan as to how to compost their waste at their church. They argued containers, methods, worms, volunteers, location, policy, practices. In the end, they never did, at least while she was there, start to compost their compostable waste. An opportunity was lost because individual folks in the congregation got stuck on making sure that their view, which of course they each thought was the best or right view, was the one that won out. Sometimes, to create change, we need to get our egos out of the way. For a group of people as tolerant as we are, and we are tolerant, we get our backs up way more often than you would think. We have a strong intellectual kind of family history, a kind of DNA that is super comfortable with being uber smart and right. Kind of goes like this. You know, I think my answer is the answer. But, you know, my answer might be one of the answers. The answer might be an interweaving of all the smaller the answers. When it comes to beloved community, the ego must give way to something more powerful than image or ambition, or even a kind of personal reassurance that I know things are right because my plan is being followed. Myers also speaks to faith as a resistance to orthodoxy. We think we have this one down because, you know, we're the heretics after all. That reading of Steve Jobs could probably be a creed in this creedless faith that we have. Robin Myers writes of our Christian ancestors, but it could be just as well said of our UU ancestors. Our formative story is not a tale of personal piety, but of daring and sometimes deadly dissent. Resistance is in our DNA. The spirit is not just a balm in Gilead, it's a troublemaker. Damascus, Denmark, and Denver, in Selma, South Africa, and Sarajevo, in Philippi, Palestine, and Peoria, the spirit will not leave us alone. It awakens us to the simple but unbearable fact that the world as it is cannot possibly be that the world the sacred intended. We have been working on civil rights and equality for hundreds of years. Our Universalist and Unitarian forebears were on the forefront of abolition and women's rights and of labor rights. We are on the forefront of LGBTQ issues, on immigration rights and environmental issues. We are known for this, and this is something we should be proud and we should hold up. And even with decade after decade of work and passion, we are a denomination that is 88% white. As a denomination, we are taking a visible and vocal stand supporting Black Lives Matter, and that is good. But we are failing miserably at actually being a diverse denomination in our pews, at our potlucks, at our community meetings. We may grumble about conservative theologies, but the Seventh-day Adventists and the Muslims top the list in this country as the most ethnically diverse. We mean well, of course. We really do. We sing our hearts out. We listen to sermons. Some of us even pray long prayers. But none of it can finally compensate for the fact that as a change agent, we have a bit disappeared. Instead of acting like leaven in this society, there are times when we act like chameleons, absorbed into the very dominant culture we are called to critique and resist. It is possible that we have an orthodoxy that we are unwilling to look at. An orthodoxy that prevents us from being the beloved community with a welcome that transforms all individuals and the world. And it's not that we need to throw out the old ways. I'm not asking that the chalice be done with as an important symbol, but let's be aware of what we do and why we do it and what the impact is. If we resist orthodoxy, we will be more welcoming and open, not just welcoming to folks who act like they are well-educated, Eurocentric white folks. And what about faith as resistance to empire? Our roots are in the American Christian Church, a especially the heretical part of that church. We are good at telling society how it must transform, but we are sometimes a bit resistant to looking at how we must transform our own communities. We are part of an empire, the United States of America. We, as long as we choose to, continue living here in this country and receiving the benefits, participate in that. And it's easy to get seduced by it. I could do a whole sermon on political resistance, but this late in the game, I don't think I'm going to take you on another 20-minute diatribe. And it's not really what I'm trying to get at here. What I am trying to get at here is we are heretical people with a prophetic voice, and we need to take care not to lose that voice. So instead of talking about the political empire, I'd rather talk a little bit about what are some ways we can begin to think about changing ourselves so that we can change the empire. How about when you are standing in the line at the grocery store and you see a young black man who is sacking your groceries and avoiding your gaze, wait until he meets your gaze and look at him and say, "Thank you, sir." You could put in a garden so you won't really forget where your food comes from and how much work it takes. You could raise nonviolent children, help your neighbor raise nonviolent children, help your children raise nonviolent children. Here's one that I practice as much as I can every day. I eat dinner with my family almost every day. It's hard to do that. If you live alone, you might find ways to connect face-to-face with other people. Seriously, this is coming from me, your minister who spends way too much time on Facebook. I'm telling you, face-to-face is a good thing. These are all getting at mute the soundtrack of the empire and its incessant babble, and take a walk, read more poetry, figure out how to be alone with yourself. It's okay. We really are what we do when no one else is looking. And remember the gospel truth. Not a single one of us gets out of this life alive. All families are dysfunctional. And either all of us matter or none of us do. So let's make it all of us. And it's not that planting a garden will break the military empire of this world. I am nowhere near that idealistic. But if I take time and make a life that does not, as a default, follow the empire's status quo, I am way more likely to be prepared and ready to resist from a place of spiritual depth than I would have otherwise. All of this resistance to ego, orthodoxy, empire helps to build a beloved community. And it is the beloved community that is countercultural. I was talking with someone the other day about the story of John Murray, the minister credited with bringing universalism to this continent. As the story goes, when he landed in America, Thomas Potter said to him, "I am so glad you are here. You are the person I have been waiting for." The person I was speaking with said that that sentence just had such an impact on them. What would it be like if we each had a place or a person that lit up when we came in the room? Or what if we each said to ourselves, "I am so glad I am here. I am the person I have been waiting for." What if we said that to each other as we greeted one another, if not in words, then at least in attitude? So that as we invite someone into membership in our church, and as we each feel moved by this faith, we might imagine we are being recruited into a great countercultural resistance of love, a joyful effort that seeks in small and big ways to offer our lives as witness to and keepers of the great story of human connection, goodness, beauty, equality, and love. I am so firmly convinced that as we create that community here, a place where we might light up when we each come in the room, a place of extravagant welcome, a place where we love the hell out of the world. We will transform ourselves. We will transform each other. We will welcome the larger community into this place and transform it. And we will take that extravagant welcome out into the world and be part of the transformation. That is what spiritual defiance can do. In a world without end, may this be so.